Before beginning, please take note. You may refer to this, episode 13, as the Chipmunk Exxon Show, interspersed with segments of comedy. I've decided to upload the show at a higher sample rate because it is primarily another rant. It's not an unreasonable and it's not an insignificant rant. It's certainly a rant about a topic that affects everyone on Earth, but in a way, when I was reviewing it, I found that I was more comfortable listening to it so long as I sounded like a chipmunk while I was ranting. And so I'll leave it like that. Thank you.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and this is episode 13. Do you think I care about whether it's episode 13? Do you think I'm worried about that number or even thinking about it? No! As a matter of fact, this is the number I'm thinking about.
$36 billion!
Reported earnings of ExxonMobil. $36 billion, but we're not going to get into that right away because at the top of the show, at the beginning of the show, episode, installment, still don't know what to call these things. Here at the beginning of the podcast, as I have promised in other podcasts, anything like shout-outs, acknowledgments, or listener feedback or responses or cooperation, participation, whatever. Folks out there that I know have acknowledged the existence of this podcast in one form or another, are mentioned, read about, and acknowledged themselves here at the beginning. There must have been a shorter way to say that. I don't know what it was. But there is listener feedback here again from Digger's Story. Digger Story is a podcast that I played the promos for, and you should go take a listen to. And you can, of course, get to them through www.diggersstory.com. All one word, just put down diggers, plural, and then story. There's two S's in the middle there. So www.diggersstory.com, excellent podcast, and listener feedback is as follows. Wow, I love all your shows and I review them whenever I can. Thank you. It amazes me what floats around in your mind. Believe me, it amazes me too. My little pea brain gets overwhelmed quite easily and it takes me a while to grasp things, but once I get it, I've been known to overtake others. I don't know about little pea brain. I'd have to argue with that. I've listened to Digger's Story, and a little pea brain couldn't come up with that kind of energy and put together an audio experience that's worth listening to. So I beg to differ with you, but I'll continue. I have been known to overtake others. Please keep podcasting. I learned so much from your podcast. Yes, and by the way, thanks for playing my promos. That's very kind of you to remember our podcast. Two thumbs up for all you do and for your podcasts. That from Digger Poots and Patter, diggerstory.com. I thank you very, very much. I love positive feedback. Now, this is the second listener response that I've gotten, and the two that I've gotten have both been from diggerstory.com. Which is great, but I hope there's more listening, and I hope I get feedback to compliment this one. And again, it doesn't have to be complimentary. If you want to write in and tell me that I'm a stew-not and that I don't know what I'm talking about, do that too. But I appreciate the kind words and the praise that encourages me to continue, and so I shall. And of course I'm going to keep playing the promos for Digger Story. I wasn't up for 2 days. I wasn't online as a podcast for 2 days before Digger Story was making use of some of the audio from my output on their own podcast. So that's excellent. Who else to talk about? Who else to acknowledge in this? Well, of course, Gamer the Podcasting, Caroline, Jeff, and Sasha. The Mad Three. The LARPers. The live-action role-players. Their podcast, Gamer the Podcasting, one of the three that inspired me to start my own, It's a gaming podcast, and so is Dragon's Landing with Chuck and Lonnie. That's a gaming podcast as well. Oh, I hate trucks. And while obviously International Detective Dragons from Outer Space is not a gaming podcast, I listen to those two and other gaming podcasts because I found that people that engage in role-playing games, particularly tabletop and fantasy role-playing games, seem to have the kind of mind that I would pigeonhole my own into, if that's possible, if it's possible to even do that, categorize a way of thinking or a scope of imagination. But the scope seems to be pretty large and diverse. Just generally, the mind, the way the mind works and where it goes in people that are imaginative enough to engage in role-playing games. And that covers a pretty wide spectrum of people. Generally, that's the type of talk I like to listen to. But what we're acknowledging here is I did some audio for Gamer the Podcasting. Mini dramas, I think I called them. And I did the same for Dragon's Landing. I sent one off also to Harping Mick at the Round Table. And you want to talk about pea brains, when I sent that off, I indicated to them it was going to be played in episode 12. I had already recorded episode 12. I hadn't even done the mini dramas yet. What I should have said was that it was going to be recorded in episode 13, but my pea brain, and I will acknowledge that I do have, couldn't even keep straight what episode I was on. But anyway, this being episode 13, that's the one where I'm going to play them. So I'm going to play those mini dramas during this episode. And they were just little audio vignettes. They mentioned or alluded to those respective podcasts in what I hope was an entertaining and amusing way. And I've sent another one off to the Round Table. I haven't, that one hasn't actually recorded recently. And if it's played on that or Misfit Brew, the two podcasts that come out of the House of the Harping Monkey, that would certainly be super. But there's the one I sent to Harping Mick was a bit on the long side. It was a little bit, it would really cut into their playtime, so certainly, of course, up to them what they want to do with it, but I'm going to play that one today, too. And of course, it'll be, individually, I'll make them available on the Audio Candies link, where I have a whole bunch of bizarre, strange, and unusual bits of audio, sound cartoons, snippets, whatever you want to call them, that are fun to listen to, but a shout-out and a thank-you to Gamer the Podcasting and Dragon's Landing Inn because they took the little mini-dramas I did for them and played them each at the top of their shows, at the very beginning.
An update on that. Mick Bradley of the House of the Harping Monkey, the Roundtable Podcast, and the Misfit Brew Podcast did, in fact, play the segment that was sent to him at the beginning of the Misfit Brew. And so, many thanks to Mr. Bradley.
Blew me out of my chair. I was astounded. I got up, I danced, I sat down, I was done. And it was just a lot of fun to do and a lot of fun to hear. So thank you guys for playing that. And thank you for making mention of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space on your podcasts. And of course, anybody that's been listening to IDDFOS here since early on know that their promos have been played since episode 3 and will continue to be played. Now, what about this? Is today, $36 billion. What does that refer to? What does that refer to? ExxonMobil. The earnings of ExxonMobil. And I don't know, what is that, for the fiscal year 2005? Or to date? Fiscal year 2006? I doubt it. I think it's 2005. I can't comprehend it. I can't comprehend it. I don't even know where I'm going to go with this next, so I'm going to stop for a second. $36 billion? Billion. Billion dollars. $36 billion. That doesn't... You know what? Infinity fits in my head better than $36 billion. I can't conceive of that amount of currency, of money. It stops being money It stops being money. At $36 billion, it's not money anymore. It's an outrageous concept. I gotta... What job? How do you stand at a podium in front of a nation of people who are being raped for their gas money? People who aren't going anywhere on long trips or anything. People who have to work. People have to somehow work into their budget the ability to pay for their gas. How do you stand at a podium and announce a profit of $36 billion and not be shot? And I, as a lowly, ignorant, common man, I guess I just have to suppose that I, as an ordinary, ignorant, common man, could not begin to understand all the different subtleties and nuances and major, major long-term future expenses and planning that make that $36 billion just an absolute necessity to continue the survival of the company. Yes, it's profit, but not really, I'm sure. I'm sure it's not really profit. I'm sure it's just an inflated number that they tell their investors so that they look good. It's possible that the profit could be as low as $10 billion. So I should fully accept $3 plus gas prices and get ready for higher prices to come. Is the American public really that lazy and stupid? Well, if you watch how far television has come in the past 50 years, I guess the answer would have to be yes. Perhaps not lazy and stupid. Perhaps that's inaccurate. Perhaps lazy, stupid, and insane is more accurate. Or perhaps none of that is accurate because, honestly, what do you do? What can you do? It's a stranglehold. Companies that have strangleholds on your friggin' life. You're being held down, and your pocket is being emptied. And you have nothing to do with it. You have nothing to say about it. Or you have plenty to say about it. Say as much as you want. Here I am, in a wonderfully free country where I can actually say this, supposedly, and not get arrested. That's as of today. Which is wonderful. But you can say as much as you want. Protest as much as you want. Get 100,000 signatures on a petition. And send that in. And then go protest. Go march. 50,000, 100,000, a million people march on Washington. Demanding that only a portion of this $36 billion be applied to a serious program to get us off oil. Demand it. You think you're going to get it? What have you got to offer? What have you got to offer? How many lawyers can you hire? If you've got $36 billion, no one can touch you. You cannot be touched. If you're in violation of any law, all you gotta do is buy it. Buy the law, and then mangle it into a shape that fits your purposes. You could buy countries. The oil companies can buy countries with $36 billion. Although there's no real particular point, they already have. They already own the United States. That is, those portions of the United States that weren't already bought by foreign interests. If they lowered their profit down to the poverty level of $35 billion instead of $36, they could give $1 million to 999 inner-city schools. Each. Schools could use it as an investment. And the yearly return on the investment could be a scholarship for whichever student managed to actually... whatever student actually managed to learn something despite the conditions they're being sent to school under. With capitalism and a free market, we have a right to make as much money as we do because we invested some of it. Hundreds of thousands. Millions of people work for Exxon to make this profit. Our investors expect us to give it. You don't have a responsibility to turn that money over to schools or energy research. No, you don't have a responsibility to do that. You don't have a responsibility with that much power. You don't have a responsibility not to lie to everybody's face and rip them off at the same time. You don't have a responsibility for that. I had to find out who they are. We've heard the term they so often. You hear it all the time. Well, they don't care about the little guy. Well, they are going to set whatever price they want to. We just have to take it. They make up the rules as they go along. It's the law of supply and demand. They have all the supply so they can demand whatever they want. Thank you, George Carlin. Or was that Robert Klein? I forget. But I went to the website for Exxon Mobil. I just wanted to find out who they were. I could only find, really, and I didn't do a lot of digging because I didn't have a lot of time. I could only find 12 of them. 10 guys and 2 women. Bear with me, I'm just going to read you their names, just in case somebody says, who's they? They're listed in alphabetical order, I think. I think they are. Michael J. Boskin, age 60. On the board of directors, this is a list of the board of directors. Mobil Exxon Corporation board of directors. After Michael J. Boskin, William W. George, age 63. James R. Houghton, age 70. Now you can go to the Exxon Mobil website. I hope you can, anyway. I'm assuming you have internet access. And find these names. William R. Howell, age 70. Riatha Clark King, age 68. Philip E. Lippincott, age 70. Henry A. McKinnell, Jr. Jr. Oh, I love it. Oh, it cut off his age. I don't know how old he is. Well, he looks to be about 68 or something. Marilyn Carlson Nelson, age 66. Samuel J. Palmisano, age 54. Ooh, a young guy. Walter V. Shipley, age 70. Stephen J. Simon, age 62. And of course, the chairman of the board and chief executive officer of ExxonMobil Corporation, Rex W. Tillerson, age 54. Another young guy. Rex? Guy's first name is Rex? I just looked at that. Isn't that like Latin for king? They named their kid Rex. Why not? It's fitting. King Tillerson. $36 billion! That's the board of directors. Those 12 people share more power than most small countries. They can buy most small countries. And so you got the current sock puppet, spokesmouth, for whoever is actually running things, getting off the presidential helicopter, or walking away from whatever breakfast or conference he happened to be attending, telling reporters, no, there shouldn't be a windfall tax on the oil companies, a windfall profit tax, because they should be taking that profit, or a portion of that profit, and researching alternative energy methods. In other words, they should be spending their money. They should be spending our money on finding ways to put themselves out of business. They should be spending their money on finding ways that will necessitate the entire retooling of their operation to essentially stop making use of oil and natural gas. Yeah, that's going to happen. I did a little further clicking on the ExxonMobil website. Because I wanted to see, you know what? I wanted to prove myself wrong. I wanted to see what kind of front they were putting up on the internet to indicate just how warm and fuzzy they are. And so I went to a section I think it was called Core Campaign or Core Issues. Essentially, whatever would display some humanitarian aspect of this company. And I saw two sublistings. One was a fight against malaria, and the other was scientific education. So I clicked on scientific education. Page not found. You want to talk about a reflection of the Bush administration? The Bush administration has been so anti-science, one fella wrote a book about it. I'm going to have to research that. See, if I can find that book, I think it was called The War Against Science. Oh, I don't know what it was called. I just made that up. But if I can find the book, because I heard it referred to on another podcast, I'll put a link to that, a direct Amazon link to that.
The actual name of the book is The Republican War on Science by Chris Mooney. And there will be a link to it in the show notes.
So yeah, their scientific education page just happens to not be there. And the one about malaria certainly gave some alarming statistics. And of course, they're dealing with it because it's in portions of the world, at least in Africa, that they'd like to go in and drill for more oil at. They'd like to set up operations where they can drill for more oil, but the population is dying off because of malaria. Their indication was 7,000 children a day. A day. I can't comprehend that. The death toll of the Indonesian earthquake just recently was set somewhere at around 5,000. I mean, you get into these numbers, these mortality numbers, and it boggles the mind. You can't wrap your head around it. I know I can't wrap my head around that many people getting killed over what supposedly is a natural occurrence. I mean, an outbreak of malaria quadrupling over the past 5 years when for a while there was all but eradicated. What's that about? So they're talking about these alarming figures, but they go on to say that they've been so humanitarian and kind as to send over 250,000 mosquito nets to these suffering countries over the past 3 years. Not even in a year. Over 3 years, they sent 250,000 mosquito nets. Well, thank you. And then, of course, they contributed over $2 million in grants in order to study how to combat this. $2 million? This is one of your core concerns? $2 million? $36 billion. $1 billion is $1 million times 1,000. That's 1 billion. It's $1 million times 1,000. You spent $2 million to distribute as grants to study how to stop malaria. You know, I'm sorry, if you are a corporation, you're a multinational corporation, and you make a profit of $36 billion, you just don't fall under the category of a company to me. You are not a company. Milton Bradley, to me, Milton Bradley, that's a company. A tele agency that hires out temps, that's a company. Yeah, it doesn't even fall under the category of corporation to me. General Mills, that's a company, that's a corporation. Corning Glass, that's a company, that's a corporation. ExxonMobil is a world frickin' power. You are a world, $36 billion, you are a world power. And are you gonna tell me that the decision making and the policies, the actual practices of what we're told is the government of the United States is not influenced by that? Are you gonna tell me that the armed forces of the United States are not mobilized to go after that, to go after that oil, when you've got a world power like ExxonMobil capable of buying countries? Are you gonna tell me that's not the case? I don't think I formed a complete sentence just now. I'm just so, my brain is clenched around this. My brain wants to leap out of the skull and just run down the road screaming. I can't handle it. I can't handle it. Key energy issues. This for ExxonMobil is key energy issues. You don't believe me? Listen to this. Prices for crude oil and petroleum, this is directly from their site. Prices for crude oil and petroleum products are set by worldwide markets comprised of multiple players reacting to their perceptions of supply and demand. In other words, the high prices aren't our fault. It's all those crazy people that are controlling the oil supply. It's not our fault. Next sentence. As a country, we need to advance policies and initiatives that support the underlying economic fundamentals that lead to a balanced oil marketplace. As a country, we need to advance policies and initiatives that support the underlying economic fundamentals that lead to a balanced oil marketplace. That is the most euphemistic way I have ever heard it put. My translation of that sentence is, since we're not in control, in full control of the supply, and supposedly at the mercy of the people who are, we need to go and take it from them. A balanced oil marketplace, of course, in the eyes of ExxonMobil, would be one in which they could get any of the oil they want from anywhere they want, at will. And who is ExxonMobil to tell, as a corporation, to start talking about what the country needs to do? As a country, basically it says the United States should do what's good for us. I go back to the line in Winter. The vexin is mine. By what authority? It's got my troops all over it. That makes it mine. So my other favorite line from that movie, there's no use asking if the air is good when there's nothing else to breathe. Lion in Winter, Peter O'Toole, Katharine Hepburn. I'm not going to go into the cast. Just rent it, buy it. It's worth owning. Wonderful picture. Next sentence. After talking about policies and initiatives, this includes efforts to reduce the complexities and regulatory limitations that are creeping into our refinery and logistics systems due to the proliferation of specialty fuels and other factors. In other words, take away all checks and balances or any kind of regulation against us because it's cutting into our $36 billion profit. Oh, I skipped a sentence. This includes, talking again about policies and initiatives, this includes support for access to areas that will allow the U.S. to increase domestic energy production and focused efforts to reduce the... Oh, okay. Yeah, the first part of that was, I know you're concerned about the ecology and pristine land, but screw the environment of Alaska. We want to go in and drill for more oil. And the whole thing behind it, I mean, the whole thing about alternative energy, there wasn't any alternative energy. Their methods for increasing energy production was to go after more oil and gas. All the efforts of study and research has been on how to get more oil, not how to get off of oil. Obviously, they're an oil company. Why would they study how to get off oil? They're not going to sink any money into solar research. They're not going to sink any money into the solution of, what was it? The Gaia-Saline solution after my rant in 3. I know this is turning into a rant, too, and I'm not going to go on with this for much longer, believe me. This whole show is not going to be about ExxonMobil and that money. It's not, you know what? It's not even money. You can't even think of it. It stops being money. It just becomes raw power. It elevates those who control it to a practically, in human affairs, it elevates them to godlike status. Let's face it. So yeah, they certainly wouldn't be investing in anything like microwave beam stations or getting people up to the moon to create solar energy farms. On a positive note, let me leave ExxonMobil now. Let's go ahead and leave them and go to a positive thing here. Let me stop for a second. There are people out there, there are very smart people, who have already thought all of this through and recognize that the kind of change necessary in order for us to stop sending people to the other side of the world to die because we just absolutely positively have to have more oil. There's no other way. There's just no other way. People that have rejected that, of course, have been coming up with alternate methods. I know that I ranted on about 30 years of no scientific advances in energy. And it was a repeated sarcastic statement because I think deep down I knew that, yeah, there must have been advances. It's just that they haven't been allowed to flourish, allowed to be put into practice, or at least no one with any degree of the kind of power I was talking about was willing to let it happen or support it. Well, there's a website that I'm going to put a link to under favorite links on the IDDFOS webpage. And it's called worldchanging.com. www.worldchanging.com. Worldchanging, all run together as one word. And what they list there is articles about people that are doing positive and effective things, about energy research and different areas of science and the people that are putting it forward and making practical use of it on a small scale. In some cases, on a large scale. Articles that indicate that you don't have to be at the mercy of petroleum-based energy systems. And we're not talking about an online version of Mother Earth catalog here. We're talking about some serious, and in some cases, large-scale solutions that have been put to the test and work. But I'll link up to the page that tells you immediately what they're about, and then of course you can go to their homepage and check stuff out for yourself. There's some good things happening, being done by some exceptional people. And at that, I'm going to play a couple of podcast promos here. Actually, you know what I'm going to no. Actually, I'm going to play. The mini dramas. The mini dramas that I sent to the other three podcasts. Well, we'll start with one, and I'll play the others throughout the course of the show. But I'll be back in a bit. Good things happening. Smart people taking steps. After I went to worldchanging.com. I looked at a couple of articles. I zeroed in on one that showed how to make a wind turbine that generates electricity to recharge a battery bank for power for your house. Now, this is certainly not something that you could just go do in your garage. Not judging by what I was looking at. It took a little bit... No, it took a whole lot of skill to make this thing. And some significant electrical smarts to make it work properly. Everybody's at a different level of technical expertise. Some are down there at zero and can't operate a single thing or figure out how to operate a single thing or fix or repair it or whatever. Just the mechanical technical aspect of their experience or inclination just isn't there. And some folks, right around the mid-ground, can figure most things out. Some things get beyond them, though. And unless they have specialized training, can't really go much further than they're at. But there's ability there. There's innate skill there. And some folks, of course, on a scale of 1 to 10, would be 14, like these guys. And it all depends on what you know and what you're used to working with. I was listening to a podcast just yesterday. And it's none of the ones that I've advertised. I just happened to... I clicked on a link, thought maybe this would be interesting. So I listened to the guy for a while. He was telling a story about renting a sander, and the guy at the Home Depot asking him, "You do have a 20-amp breaker, don't you? You do have a 20-amp circuit in your house, don't you?" And he didn't know. And he didn't know how to find out. To me, that was kind of crazy to not know that. But of course he went and he looked and he figured it out. And now he knows. To these guys that were building this wind turbine, me not knowing how many windings have to go around a node on the stator and the degree of angle that the magnets have to be placed at and how fast or how slow the gearing mechanism has to be, me not knowing any of that stuff must seem kind of strange as being charitable. But these are smart guys. Very smart, very skilled. Combining the knowledge of mathematics, electricity, metallurgy, and mechanics to produce something that takes energy from the wind and stores it in batteries. Whole countries are making use of this. Check online for wind power. It's being done. Because there are folks that are just pretty much long past fed up and have already taken steps long ago to just tell ExxonMobil and anybody else that's out there determined to keep oil as the mainstay of energy usage in the world, and therefore the source of most of the political strife that we're witnessing right now, at least as far as the United States goes, they're willing to say, goodbye, no more, we've had it, And we're not waiting for you either. Back in a bit. There's got to be a sanity issue going on here. There's got to be something very, very basically wrong with the human brain. Something missing. And it operates at every scale. I have to keep going back to that number, 7,000. 7,000 malaria victims a day. A day? This is reported by Exxon. I don't know how true it is. I don't know where they're getting their numbers from. 7,000 a day? That's the only thing I can think of that's more appalling than the 36 billion. 49,000 people, mostly children, a week, dying? And this is something that can't be combated by the combined resources of the world? That can't be right. 700 a day is too many. 7,000 a day? That can't be right. If 49,000 people a week were dying, there'd be nobody left. There'd be nobody left on that continent. Let's round it up to 50,000 people a week. That would mean every year, 2,400,000 people. 2,400,000 people dying.
2,600,000, Annam. I know you're upset, but do the math. And besides, that number turns out to be incorrect. The actual numbers will be repeated toward the end of the show.
From malaria. Those numbers have got to be wrong. I didn't go back into any of the earlier years, 2004, 2003. I didn't go back into any of the other years for the windfall profits of ExxonMobil. But suppose they were so unfortunate that one year they actually only made $10 billion. Even in a year like that, to say on their website that they made available $2 million in grants to study eradicating malaria, I'd be embarrassed to put that down. I would be embarrassed to say that that's what we invested as a company to solve this problem that's killing 7,000 kids a day. The number has to be wrong. I'm going back to the site to look again. Before I finish this, I'm going back to the site to look again. But we were talking about skilled and knowledgeable individuals bypassing the energy grid and making use of homemade and industrially available technologies to eliminate the need for fossil fuels. And since I've reached my first destination, I'll talk about that when I return. Back in a bit. Now granted, these guys we're talking about, just as a specific example, on a small scale, these guys that built the wind turbine, the more efficient, multiple speed, variable output wind turbine to charge their battery banks. These guys are in an area where they've got the land to do it, they have the smarts to do it, the machinery, etc. And this is not offered as something that everybody needs to do in order to get off oil. I think it's understood that the homegrown, out in the wilderness farm method of generating electricity using wind power, or using water power if you happen to be lucky enough to be near a running stream, or even using solar power to heat your water, which has been done on a large scale in certain Asian areas, particularly in China, this is not looked upon as a solution. I understand that. I don't know if most other people do, but it's just, we're not talking about a large-scale replacement for fossil fuels by doing things like that. The replacement energy, mostly in methods of generating electricity to put on the grid for use by massive amounts of people in densely populated areas, as well as the incredible amounts of energy required by the industrial sections, manufacturing plants, etc., isn't going to be generated by putting a wind turbine on the roof of every building. It's got to be an abundant, pervasive, and high-volume amount of energy put into the system. I've already gone on about it in podcast 3. If you didn't happen to hear that, in a nutshell, getting solar energy by collecting it on the moon using apparatus that is built from materials found on the moon, and converting it into microwaves that are sent to receiving stations, either circling the Earth as relays or directly at the Earth. Because solar energy is 8 times more abundant and powerful when it's not collected after being filtered through the Earth's atmosphere. So this apparently is what I need to do. I need to go back and do my homework. I want to subtract the amount of money it would take to do that from $36 billion.
Supplemental research. I read that the cost of the entire Apollo program in U.S. dollars in 1969 was $25.4 billion, or $135 billion in dollars for the year 2006. It should be important to remember, though, that a sizable portion of the original money spent was in research and development. The technologies had to be learned before they could be put into use. We know the science now. We know the technology. We don't have to research how to get somebody off the planet and into orbit. We don't have to research spacecraft design. It's already been done. So a significant portion of the cost would be reduced. I did not find any hard numbers to indicate how much a manned mission to the moon would cost today for the purposes of extracting helium-3 or setting up solar bases. I'll continue to look. If you happen to find any anywhere, please, please email it to anim5@anim5.com. Thank you.
I'm going to make the assumption that those names that I read off before, those people, who, if you were to call them wealthy, it would be an outrageous understatement. In their position, and at their time of life, primarily over 60, have the practical intelligence, imagination, and vision of a brain-damaged cricket. As far as thinking in terms of long-term gain and the health of the company, I don't think it's even a consideration for them, and hasn't been for quite some time. They define human power on Earth. If you were to make a bargain with the devil to get control of the world, those are the people you'd have to go to buy it from. Because they're not just board of directors. This is turning into a podcast about Exxon. It really is. I apologize, folks. I don't know what to tell you. It's just, it's crept into my mind, and I might as well get it off my chest, because what else am I going to do? These people on the board of directors of ExxonMobil aren't just, that's not all they are or what they do. Their other listings or their other professions include chief executive officer of Corning, a retired CEO of MetLife, Chase Manhattan Bank. I mean, go up and visit it. I'll put a link up in the notes. I'll put a link up to that page that lists who they are. And you just read for yourself. Look at their faces and read for yourself. I don't even know where I was going. Where was I going? What I was starting to say, I think, was looking at these 12 powerful people, and no doubt the entourage of people that may have even more money than they do, let's face it, there have to be some, are not going to be interested in or excited about or give a damn about getting the future taken care of in terms of oil or energy. They're just not going to care. They don't have to. They don't believe it's possible. It isn't worth doing. Because they've got a ripe crop of cattle to milk, and they have a worldwide, never-ending supply of slaves to get what they want. What do they need to worry about getting stuff out into space? What do they need to worry about going to the moon for? And why should Exxon worry about it? Well, if Exxon as a company is to continue existing, or any of these other major companies, and it doesn't have to be companies, it can be countries, but that isn't going to happen. It's certainly not going to happen in the United States. If they wanted to continue to have a stranglehold or full control, if they want full control of energy, then that's the thing to do. Put the initial investment together, make it happen, and take control. You're not selling oil anymore, you're selling microwave energy. How are you getting it? From static systems with the lowest possible maintenance you can think of. You want to talk about after initial investment, your overhead? What do you have to worry about? You're talking about solid state stuff. We're not talking about pistons. We're not talking about ships and trucks having to get crude oil from one place to another. We're not talking about refining. We're talking about solid state systems that once they're put into place, your maintenance on them is next to nothing. And they will last for generations. And the sunlight you're getting is free. And they're not doing it because they don't have to. It's easier not to. It's just easier not to. It's easier to rob you blind, kill your kids, and make you sweat. Never will understand that. This isn't trivial, but it's not exactly exciting to listen to. There's nothing fun or interesting about it.
Well, that brings the Chipmunk Exxon rant to an end, along with episode 13. Not going to end with music this time, going to end with a piece that I did that reveals to anyone that listens that I do in fact play the massive multiplayer online game World of Warcraft, along with over 6 million other people on Earth. And this is a kind of a comic treatment of one aspect of the game, but I'll let you listen to it and shut up now.
Now, you know it's our policy never to take the guild into Arathi Basin unless every new member has at least some training and orientation.
Yeah. And I agree with that 100%. It's just common sense.
All right, then. So when we go after the resource flags, we put a lead tank in command of a specialized team. And their only responsibility is to capture and then guard that specific location. You get me so far?
Yep. You put a leader and a team to tackle and hold each resource.
Right. And as a priest, you may be asked to switch from place to place to add healing support as the battle goes on. So it's really important to know who you're going to and where they are.
Okay.
Now, when we first start out, we have three primary targets that we go for. The farm.
The farm.
The stables.
The stables.
And the blacksmith. You got that?
Got it. Farm, stables, blacksmith. Well, you know, I've never met the guys, so you'll have to give me a quick rundown on their names, and then I'll know who's guarding what area.
Okay, I'll tell you their names, but, you know, it seems to me most WoW players pick some pretty peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Yes, yeah, strange names. Pet names, like Yellow Moon.
Yeah, or Orange Star.
Uh-huh. Or Green Clover.
Or Blue Diamond. I noticed that, too. Okay, so...
Okay, let's see. We have who's on the farm, what's at the stables, and I don't know is at the blacksmith.
That's what I want to find out.
I'm saying, who's on the farm, what's at the stables, and I don't know is at the blacksmith.
Have you done a lot of Arathi Basin?
Yes.
And you're the guild leader, too?
Yes.
And you don't know the members' names?
Well, I should think I do.
Well, then who's on the farm?
Yes.
I mean the fella's name.
Who?
The guy on the farm.
Who?
The farm tank.
Who?
The guy playing...
Who is on the farm?
I'm asking you who's on the farm.
That's the player's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a team leader for just the farm.
Certainly.
Who's guarding the farm?
That's right.
Look, if the team leader at the farm sells something at the auction house, who gets the gold?
Every piece of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fella's name on the farm.
Who?
The guy that gets the gold.
That's it.
Who gets the auction money?
He does. Every gold piece. Sometimes his wife comes online and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes.
What's wrong with that? Look, all I want to know is, if the tank in charge of the farm team posts a message on the guild forum, how does he sign his name?
Who?
The guy.
Who?
How does he sign?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
Can you tell me something?
Sure.
What's the guy's name leading the farm team?
No, what is at the stables?
I'm not asking you who's at the stables.
Who's on the farm?
One resource at a time.
Well, don't go changing the players around.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you who's the guy on the farm.
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
So what's the guy's name on the farm?
No, what is at the stables?
I'm not asking you who's at the stables.
Who's on the farm?
I don't know.
Well, she's at the blacksmith. We're not talking about her.
Now, how did I get up to the blacksmith?
Well, you mentioned her name.
If I mentioned her name, who did I say is guarding the blacksmith?
No, who's guarding the farm?
What's on the farm?
What's at the stables?
I don't know.
She's at the blacksmith.
There I go, back to the blacksmith again. Yeah, look, would you just stay at the blacksmith and don't leave it?
All right, what do you want to know?
Now, who's guarding the blacksmith?
Why do you insist on putting who at the blacksmith?
What am I putting at the blacksmith?
No, what is at the stables?
You don't want who at the stables?
Who is on the farm?
I don't know.
Blacksmith.
Look, you got a team that goes after the mine?
Sure.
The leader's name?
Why?
I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's leading the mine team.
Who's guarding the farm?
Stay away from the primary targets. I want to know what's the name of the mine leader.
No, what is at the stables?
I'm not asking you who's at the stables.
Who is on the farm?
I don't know.
Blacksmith.
The mine leader's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's on the lumber mill team.
Look, you got a paladin in this guild?
Sure.
The paladin's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you now.
Then go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow are you going to tell me who's the paladin?
Now listen, who is not the paladin?
I'll break your arm, you say, who's on the farm.
I want to know what's the paladin's name.
What's at the stables? I don't know.
Blacksmith.
Got a rogue?
Certainly.
The rogue's name?
Today.
Today. And tomorrow's the paladin.
Now you got it.
All we got is a couple of days in the guild. All right. You know I'm a priest.
So they tell me.
All right. Arathi Basin gets fired up and starts. We all charge out and I'm following behind the team for the blacksmith. We get to it and capture it with no problems. We hear that we got the farm too, but it's under attack. So I get down there as fast as I can and see that our leader for that team is a warrior in pretty bad shape. So me, being a good priest, cast healing on... who?
Now that's the first thing you said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
That's all you have to do.
Is to cast healing on the farm team leader.
Yes.
Now who's healed?
Naturally.
Look, if I cast healing on the leader of the farm team, somebody's got to get healed. Now, who is it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I run to the farm and cast healing on naturally.
No, you don't. You cast healing on who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I said!
You're not saying it.
I cast healing on naturally.
You cast healing on who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said!
You ask me.
I cast healing on who?
Naturally.
Now you ask me.
You cast healing on who?
Naturally.
That's it. Same as you. Same as you.
I cast healing on who, but who gets killed anyway? The warlock that attacked him heads off to the stables to attack what? But what smacks him down and sends me off to heal Tomorrow, who just killed a rogue sneaking up by way of the river. Zerg defeated. Then an undead hunter charges over the bridge and sicks her pet on the cause. Why? I don't know. She's at the blacksmith and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's amazing.
Thank you for enduring this venting of mine about the outrageous amount of money that was a profit of the ExxonMobil Corporation. I will try to keep this type of podcast to a minimum, but every once in a while something just pries open some portion of me that explodes. And I tried to get through it as quickly as possible by speeding up the audio. If it was any more fun or less fun to listen to in that particular regard, again, write in, let me know. The next episode will be at normal speed. And of course, in episode 14, I'll be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well with you. Thank you very much for listening. And best of days. Thank you.
Thank you.